The theme for the afternoon talk is the power of happiness, joy, and gladness. We are engaged in a process here, and it is a process which is a deepening process. It is a process also of exploration, of meditation, which has a long history to it. Women and men have gathered in groups, small and large, for 2,600 years and engaged in same or very, very similar one as we are engaged in at this time as the living generation. And in this process, there is a certain concentration due to the form of the retreat, but it is important to remember and keep in heart and mind that much of what we engage in here is suitable and worth remembering into the daily life circumstances. And if remembered and applied into the daily life circumstances, it will make a real quality difference to the daily life, if applied. So in the exploration of the going deep, just like to give some short reminders here, then speak to in more detail this, keep in touch and in tune with the actual practices which are taking place. There has been encouragement, of course, as a thread, a theme, which consistently is running through the period of time of the mindfulness of breathing. It is not an absolute. There is not an instruction to constantly be with the mindfulness of breathing, but it does serve as a precious and valuable reference point. So we connect in, we touch in with the breathing process regularly through the day. And then the encouragement from that is the connection with the experiencing of the body. In this experiencing of the body, it is to experience it mindfully, clearly, and with a genuine presence. Very easily, we bring the old view and attitude and idea to the body, which we have believed in and identified with for far too long. What I have in mind here is in the relationship to the body, there is a view which assumes it is true. And the consistent view that we have is one or two, or going backwards and forwards. One is I, the self, the me, the ego, that notion of I, it arises and it identifies with the organic life which has got the name body. I am the body. It shows itself in the view which arises. I am sitting here. The I has no capacity to sit. It is an I. It is the form which is organic life, which is combined of elements, which is manifesting through this process of life, and therefore a significant change to be made. Instead of I am sitting here, for which there is no evidence, there is seeing clearly that this formation, bodily formation, with its feet, arms, legs, arms, hands, and the rest of it, has formed together. It is a physical formation. It has come obviously out of the nature of the elements. This has appeared in this world, and it has one significant aspect to it, and that is it comes with consciousness. That a human being has the capacity, and this is a remarkable one, of being very, very conscious of this physical experience. And the other view which accompanies this view, very common, is to shift from an identity with the body. I am sitting here, I am tall, short, fat, young, old, I. To shift, and we can easily switch over, turn over to another view which we equally believe, and in that view it makes a possession of the body. There is an ownership, and in the ownership it is my body. This is my leg, my arm, my knees, back, my pain, whatever it might be. And we don't even realize that the two views which seem so real to each other are in complete contradiction. How could that which one identifies with, and this is who I am this body, I am tall, short, fat, thin, etc. Then another view comes in which there is a space between I, this space, the my, and it's a possession, my body. And both of these views are very damaging for clarity and wisdom, because there is no fundamental truth in it. They are cancelling each other's out. I can't be the body and have a body. But equally important to this is the intimacy of the relationship to the body, to this formation of organic life. We can see, because consciousness confirms this through direct experience and evidence, that in the relationship we have with the body, the condition of the heart and mind, condition of consciousness, of perception, has an influence on the body. The two events, called three really, consciousness, heart-mind, which includes thought and feeling, and body, mutually influence each other because of this closeness of it. Somebody says something to you, whatever they may be, and you or I, we find it very embarrassing what has just been said to us. It can have such an impact in the moment that the colour of our skin goes from, if you like me, a whitey, from an anemic white to sudden pink and red. That's just because somebody said something to us. We can experience some fear or contraction around something, and immediately we can feel the impact of that in the stomach with some kind of tightness which is taking place. Somebody says something to us which is humorous and funny and playful, and the impact of her or his words to us touch us, it makes us laugh, and we feel sometimes the whole body responding. Vibrations and sensations, the whole body is changed in its sensations and feelings through that interaction. The heart, mind, consciousness, and the body has a really close relationship, clearly. And part of this practice and this exploration here and in the daily life, one important aspect, as just mentioned to you, is it possible to see this organic life with care and respect, that means to be conscious, in such a way that the relationship to it is getting steady, and the contribution, as this ancient teaching passing through 2,600 years, that's just over 100 generations there, has a voice for us to apply to see what influence is my heart, mind, consciousness having on the body. And that noticing of that, so we get in the first flow here, am I remembering every day here, without exception, not only to experience the body, but quite purposefully, if needed, to bring more calmness to the body? Because if we forget this, if we take the physical for granted, and slowly but gradually stress is building in the body, tension, I've not noticed this interdependence of heart, mind, and body together. So the body is vulnerable to the present, sometimes in happy and joyful ways, and sometimes in painful ways. And in that intimacy of the two, that touch upon the two, if it's difficult and painful, the body will absorb that difficult memory, that circumstance from the past. That is resident in the body. Then comes another difficult situation in our life. That then also impacts. So one has got difficult situation of the old, which, because there wasn't a practice for us of experiencing the body, calming the body, working with it, and the new, the collision, whoa. Is it surprising that sometimes with the physical experience, through time, we can feel quite overwhelmed, feel it's very, very difficult to cope with, because in fact we're dealing not only with the difficult present, whatever that may be about, but we're dealing with the quiet, unnoticed, ignored accumulation from the past, and the two go together. And it's this practice, as a practice there, to find ways to experience the body, calming of the body, and in the calming of the body, to trust that the problematic physical formations, with the calmness, begin to break up. They actually begin to dissolve. They are not carved in the rock. And it can be, and some of you report this, that in the settling into the process which is taking place, though there may be old unresolved physical issues, whatever that may be about, from an accident to a sickness to a painful emotional mental circumstance, though that impact has left its formations, in the calming of the body, it's not holding it together. And in its not holding of it together, it will break down, it will begin to dissolve, because for it to hold together, there has to be a contraction around it. Nothing can hold together without a contraction. And one of the major contractions which we as human beings experience on the earth is a contraction which is this pain in the body, this is happening to me. It isn't. It's a belief system. It is happening, yes. But the view is so strong, so the me, and I hope you're still with me, or maybe some. So the me is not an independent, self-existent, detached one from the experience. It's not there is me, self, powerful, independent, who is having to suffer all of this pain out of the body, this trauma out of the body, this unhappiness, this memory of the body. The me does not have any independent existence. And what that means is the me comes with baggage. And the baggage it comes with is memory. The baggage it comes with, this is happening to me. And when there is experience of the body without the calming of the body, that impact on the being with the memory which forms the I, is the formation of the I, put the two together, it's called hell. Because the view is it's happening to me, this is my suffering, this is my life, and sometimes even more strongly, I am creating my own suffering, which is one big ego statement for a start. And therefore, we want to say, can I make such a shift in which I'm not carrying the baggage, which is what the self is, what the I is all about, it's a baggage, and seeing without the baggage, there is this body. This body has these difficult pains and difficulties. This body is experiencing this. This body is aging. This body is going through this, whatever it might be. And that, keeping the I and the baggage out of the story, will provide us with a space to witness and explore the bare experience and not double it, not increase it, because we're not carrying all the baggage of, oh me, oh my, this is happening to me. It's happening, yes. There's no denial. It's no suppression. But we're not inflicting wood on the fire. And this is what the ego, the I and the my so easily and quickly does. And if we if we carry that into our variety of circumstances in life, and we remember, breathe in, breathe out, experience in the body, calm the body, experience the body, calm the body, that will then contribute to a more clear relationship, so then we can attend without fear and without anxiety, because that's an ego trip, without fear and without anxiety, the event, and address it. Because the I and the my is not caught in a hook of history. And one doesn't have to work out all this past history. You do not have to go into a massive degree of personal or other self-psychology. Just don't carry the baggage of the history by seeing it's just nature. It's just the phenomena which is going on, and there's more space, as I mentioned, there. And then, a bit of water on the subject here. To take a diversion away, as I like to do, I'm not sure if it's to give Christopher some relief from the talk or you, but anyway, I was having a look the other day at there's a festival in Edinburgh. Edinburgh is a rather beautiful city in Scotland, and hopefully Scotland will gain its independence at some point from its southern neighbours, which is where I live. And I many years ago flying into Scotland from I can't remember where, it was a beautiful summer's day, and we looked out, and I don't know if you've been to Scotland, and the Scottish Highlands and the rolling area, and the pilot with his deep Scottish voice, and, ladies and gentlemen, this is Scotland. It's the kingdom of heaven, he said, but we have neighbours from hell. All right, so while there's a lovely festival in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and it's a comedy festival every summer. And then the people who go to it and the reporters, they write down, many comedians go to tell their one-liners, you know, it's a gig. And then they write down some of their favourite one-liners. So I was sitting, I thought, I don't know if the humour will come over to the Middle East, but I'm going to try it. So I've been happily married for 4 years. Out of 15 years. What is unnatural in the eyes of God? Contact lenses. Someone stole my antidepressants. I hope they will be happy. I've decided to sell my vacuum cleaner. You know what a vacuum cleaner is? Yeah. I've decided to sell my vacuum cleaner. It was gathering dust. All right, enough. What a time. When I was about 10 years of age, I still remember, you know, these memories from the past. And the school teacher in the classroom, he called each one of us up. I mean, 10 years of age, what a question to ask. And he said to each of us in the class, when you grow up, what do you want to be when you grow up? serve them. I want to be whatever, a train driver, and I want to be a pilot, and I want to be a mom, and I want to be a dad, and I want to be rich. So it was my turn. And he said, "Christopher, what do you want to be when you grow up?" So I said, "I want to be a comedian." And the teacher started laughing, and the kid started laughing, and I said, "You see, I'm going to be a good comedian." All right, let's get back to the subject. Right. So then the exploration then moves into the area of happiness and the power of happiness and joy and gladness. Not for itself, by the way, it's not how it's to be looked at there. And it isn't easy, we've had a little bit of discussions about this between us, to have a sense or know the difference between, and it's not absolutely, of course, happiness and joy. But there's an essential difference in the English here. Happiness is actually, like, with some humour and laughter, as we had a few moments ago, whatever, actually, quite often, it either moves the body, laughter, or it actually, in the releasing of the happiness, it's actually felt in the body. Sometimes it kind of warms the body up, it's felt through the cells of the body, and there's much appreciation in the tradition, in the practice, and in humanity, in these experiences of happiness. And one of the features of the touch of happiness is that in the impact on us, it's quite, can be, quite strong. The humour, the sudden meeting with somebody, the release of energy in the meditations, and much, much more. It's strong, but with it, most of the time, it's strong and short-lived. You know, we feel, we experience a real happiness about something, whatever that might be, and it's strong and it's short-lived. With the experiencing, in this case of the mindfulness of the body there, it's precious to notice and to be subtle and connected enough to feel the body feeling this happiness. There is something healing, expressing itself, it opens up cells in the body, and it gives some expansion to the being there. And we need happiness. It's, as it said so often amongst the poets, it's the food from the gods. Because sometimes it does come to us really unexpectedly. We just respond to it. And as has been pointed out with the instructions and so forth, the sense of happiness can relate to the past, present and future. We have a mindfulness which genuinely can explore all three. And sometimes here, I've got here a couple of my books here, just to take a reference here. And sometimes in the happiness which comes, in the experience of it which comes, it can bring out of the being the wish to recognize it, know it, and sometimes out of the happiness to actually write it down. And there have been times with you, which teachers of course have touched upon, where in the shared interview which takes place, it may happen that what you share with us and what we share with you, it touches a spot. It's as though it is something, a person, the practitioner in this case, something which needs to be heard. It is heard. And that may bring a response out of us. And we feel that happiness in that moment, and sometimes we have a fresh view about working or handling a situation. And then we go back, perhaps to our room, we have our piece of pen and paper or whatever it may be, and because we feel happy and glad, in this case it's a mixture of the two, happy and glad to have some potential to change something, we might wish to write it down, and in that there is a quiet joy taking place in the being as we write down to help us understand some process or something we need to remember. So out of one communication, I'm talking about the one-to-ones here and other situations there can be the happiness of, here's a fresh way of looking, a gladness that this took place, a wish to make some communication with regard to that, and out of that communication with that, there is a quiet joy. The joy, as distinct from the happiness, joy is often deeper and more sustainable. The quiet joys of life. One of those in the world of the poets. The song, the word here, is a metaphor for the deep. So catch the song where judges lose their grasp. Then throw off the wish to please the powers around. Let go no more of the living dead for you. So climb outside the coffin, screw and nail. You saw above, beyond, where skylarks flew, and see expanse of you that the gods do hail. You live upright, with vision firm and true, and then you know what's right and new for you. And the heart of the poem, the soul of the poem there, is we have a sense of the song of life. We let go of the living dead. That means those who judge us, who keep us confined, who keep us in a coffin of fear of the opinions of others, and we give ourselves the opportunity to really, like the skylarks, to fly, to feel the expanse and the freedom of not living under the shadow of anybody in this world, either by pursuing of approval or fear of their disapproval. You live upright with vision firm and true, and then you know what's right and new for you. And we have this tremendous power to explore this. It's not that far away. There are times when we've had the quiet power to make a decision, to stand out and to free ourselves up and not feel this imprisonment to the behavior of others, the views and opinions of others, the demands of others. And we can find ways to accommodate that, but not to take it in. Because we lose our soul here. We lose the depth of our our being. We become second-hand creatures. We forget to live true and upright, and forget to find out what's new in life. And the thread with the discourse, the thread with the mindfulness of breathing, in a way, is a contribution to us to remember to breathe in and out, to stand steady, to be true to something which is hard to explain to ourselves and others there. And if we breathe in and out, experiencing and calming the body, experiencing and calming the mental formations, this itself begins to release naturally, organically, our birthright. And our birthright is happiness. Our birthright is joy, that quiet sustaining of the joys in life. And our birthright as well is the experience of gladness. There. It could sound like there is some avoidance or denial or flight from the problematic kind of heart-mind formations. And it can be, and some of you have spoken of this and experienced this. Sometimes in the kind of, an analogy here, there's the cooking pot and you put some water in it and one drops a few potatoes in the cooking pot. Perhaps some of you do this at home. And after a little while, the water, of course, gets warmer and warmer. But floating up to the surface of the water is that black froth, understand, from the potatoes. And that comes up to the top of the... And then one might get the scoop or spoon and just scoop off. This is called a meditation retreat. The same event. You sit on the gas cooker and you're settling in. There are a few potatoes inside, sometimes a few kilos of them. And while you're there, and you think, well, I'm hearing all of this about happiness and joy and gladness, but all this froth, black froth, from the past and the present is surfacing. Experiencing the body, calming the body. Experiencing the heart-mind, calming the heart-mind. And it can be out of that experiencing there. We also, because it's a formation, it's a very key word, it's obviously used a lot, a formation. I said we shouldn't use the Pali word, but in this case, forgive me. No, don't forgive me. It's samkara. Sam is together. Kara is an activity. So there is an activity of coming together. If you take anything in life, anything, you got the point. This is a samkara. Why? It's had factors which have brought this together. You know, the engineers, the designers, the factories, the sellers, the buyers, all the bits and pieces in it, etc. It is a samkara there. Just as that is confirmed with the outer, it's also confirmed with the inner. It's a samkara. It's an activity which has formed together. And sometimes that activity which formed together is beautiful. Beautiful. Happiness is formed together, gladness is formed together, joy, inner peace, and insights, realizations, huge amounts can come together in our life. And sometimes we say to others, God, finally, my life is coming together. Means the formations in a healthy and precious way are forming together. When it's difficult, the formations which are difficult, what is the insight or the necessity for the change so that it stops forming together. I mean, it's pretty simple with this. I just pulled the battery out. Game over. Switch it off. Drop it. I better put it down carefully, hadn't I? I'm a mindfulness teacher. So, quite often, the view arises, because we hear it every day in these circles. Oh, I have the formation. I have to let it go. There's not a chance. It's a myth. It's part of the spiritual Buddhist rhetoric. It's time to drop this letting go idea. It's a nice idea. I hear it every day. It's boring. And the thought arises, oh, I have to let it go. The thought, I have to let it go, it could be, as an example, you're thinking madly, you're thinking. And in all of that, the thought arises because you've read it in a book or listened to one of us pathetic teachers say, let it go. How could I must, no thank you, I must let it go, which is just a thought, let go of a whole stream of thought. How is that going to happen? How can a thought, I should let it go, I must let it go, end a load of thought? It's impossible. It's the wrong understanding. And it might not even be a thought, it might be something much bigger than a stream of thoughts. And still, the same boring recipe comes up. Let it go. Whatever it might be about. It will not change your life, this ideology. It's a nice idea, but pointless. What is the mindfulness and the clarity and the comprehension to be able to look at something quietly through experiencing the calming of the formations and all of that, as much as we can, to look at it and to see what is it that needs to change here so that this particular formation crashes? Not about letting go. It's about seeing clearly. And like a house of cards, you know, when we were kids, play with the house of cards. One just pulls out one card out of that little house of cards. One card, and the whole thing dissolves. Find your card. See what's the change. But not only that, in the extraordinariness of the human experience and what is precious, we don't even have to find the insight, the card or whatever, the insight to bring about the collapse of the formation. It happens, and it happens regularly enough that in the process of the practice, experiencing the calmness of being, of body, heart and mind, exploring all of these practices, I hear regularly, and certainly with experience obviously as well here, that in all of that, sometimes some issues which had been a problem for years and decades have completely disappeared. They have gone, and they have gone forever. And the extraordinariness is one never even worked on it. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it? So often we think, if I work on it and work on it and work on it then, and I'm going to put a lot of effort into it and get rid of it and do this and do that. But sometimes in the dynamics of what is forming together, something other than that has such a interest, such a curiosity, such a sense of things, that that which kept forming together, something has gone out of the view of it to the point it's just finished. It was like a bad dream. It was a bad dream. We shouldn't underestimate the power of working with, looking into, not having a slogan like let it go, and the power as well of developing as a human being and just leaving it behind. My analogy for this, as a kid, I still remember Christmas, snowy, Christmas Day. I wondered, like lots of other kids, what am I going to get for Christmas? What's Father Christmas going to bring down the chimney pot? Apart from soot. Anyway, and I came downstairs in the morning, and there it was. A two-wheeler red bike. One happy bunny. Wow. Nice, bright. Happy Christmas, Chris. Yes. Happy Christmas, Chris. Oh, thanks, Mum. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, etc. There. I didn't have the thought, I've got to go on a retreat to learn to let go of my three-wheeler bike. I've got to practice letting go of it. Three-wheeler? That's for the kids. It's gone. I'd had it for years, since I was about 4 or 5 years of age, but it's gone. No interest. I've moved on to something. Two-wheeler. And I don't mind cycling a two-wheeler, and I don't mind, not too much, falling off it and getting back on it, etc. But I didn't have to work on the three-wheeler, letting go of the three-wheeler. And sometimes the higher vision, the deeper explorations of life, we move on. There's a loss of the capacity to reform together. And sometimes we need to look if we are doing that. Right. A few more words. So strange a thing, our human expressions, that speak of matters we find in sessions. A funny thing, we show many faces, we convey our moods and what else graces. Like clouds, we go through far more than we know. We seem apart, distant from what we show. We feel our feelings, think our thoughts, we say what words say. Yet much comes to naught. A game of winning a point so hard pressed, we never know the bee's hum, what buzz best. One truth or other forms, such a strange bond, we hardly know anything that's beyond. And the best of profound and deep traditions keep reminding us that in this exploration of happiness and gladness and joy, in the exploration of the formations of things, and in the calming of the being, and in the happiness of the being there, that there is a receptivity to that which is beyond it. We do not want to make our lives confined to the small, the modest, called your existence, my existence, our existence. He experienced concern and welfare and support for the animals, the people and the environment. It is precious. It is beautiful. If we are happy, glad, joyful human beings, with that experiencing of the calmness that was referred to, it generates a lot more energy for the service of others. That is the power of it. It is not for itself. And that the power of it means there's less time in self-indulgence, less time about I and my. We've looked at that, we've recognized it, we've seen through it, and that energy can then flow outwardly in different directions. But still, nevertheless, with all the power and connectedness that takes place, we want to take, it might seem very abstract, but we want to take an interest. Is there that which is beyond this finiteness, which is very, very close at hand, which can be known, and it's not restricted in any way to the events of heart, mind, body, and consciousness? And though that might seem kind of distant or disconnected from where we are at the present time, the small request, not for a belief, not to have another view, but in fact to take an interest in the possibility that human beings can see and know that which is much, much bigger than that which we call ourself, and have a sense that we rest every day, regardless of the condition of heart, mind and body, we rest without exception in something much bigger than this small world. And the interest of that, so to speak, is a little, so to speak, a little beyond our everyday concerns. But an interest in the potential and the possibility for that, and that which is beyond that does not know death. Let's have our quiet minute together, shall we, please? May all beings engage in this great exploration of human expressions. May all beings listen to the whispers beyond ourself. May all beings live with love and liberation.